How does my voice sound? Do I sound like I've got
hello, can you hear me now?
I keep losing the headphones right here
because it's loose.
Hang on.
What are we talking about?
I'm sure I've got to speak.
Top tips or what, Cookie?
Should we start, Francesca Panetta?
Back to school this week, and as Parliament opens for business, we bring you Politics Weekly to digest it, Alan Guardian.
And we've dragged top columnist Julian Glover and Polly Toynbee up a long flight of stairs to join Allegra and me.
Yeah, the Guardian's giving away free fairy tales this week. We were wondering what fairy tale Gordon might get sucker from. Julian?
Oh, I don't know, Hansel and Gretel. He could
why?
Disappear into the woods and never be seen again, and it might make his party a little bit happier.
Tom thinks Cinderella.
He likes the idea of being hard-working, good sort of person, some good egg toil that no one notices, but come, you know, midnight, will he be there?
Who are the evil sisters? We need to know.
Well, I'm sure in Gordon's mind there's plenty of them around.
And it does end happily.
Yes, I think the happy ending is a little bit less likely. Most fairy stories have happy endings. I'm sure Gordon would settle for any of them.
Well, when they got to the Greek islands, the MPs had dared to hope that they'd left the Duck Islands behind. But oh no, each of them got back to work to find a personal letter from Sir Thomas Legg, who's been reviewing expenses all summer long, and he attached a demand for repayment from those who he thought had been pushing their luck. Our political don-in-chief gives his take on the Legg letters.
White Noise with Michael White.
Here's a proposition on which I'd be prepared to wager a sliver of my pension fund. Despite all this week's sound and fury from MPs over Sir Thomas Legg's demands for repayment of expenses, it suits the silly tabloids and the BBC to beef up the backbench rebellion, but in their hearts MPs know it would be suicide to press on. As one smart Labour ex-minister put it to me, it's a binary decision, Mike. If you want to stay in politics, you pay up. I'd add that even those MPs planning to retire on Election Day, May the 6th, I think, or braced to be fired by the voters, will have second thoughts once their blood pressure has returned to a relatively respectable 150 over 95. Why? Because regardless of the disputed facts, the unfairness, the errors, not to mention the arbitrary and retrospective nature of Tom Legg's letters, MPs are on a hiding to nothing. Most constituents think they've all had their snouts in the trough and, in the depths of a recession, have about as much sympathy for them as they do for greedy bankers who are far, far more culpable, by the way. I happen to believe it's too sweeping and unfair a verdict. The Times estimated that, quotes, up to 24 MPs have probably committed fraud. Yes, 24 out of 645, do bear that in mind. But it was never the right time to sort out MPs' pay, or those slippery but very different concepts, allowances and expenses, an ambiguity which has caused much of the present trouble. On top of that, 74-year-old ex-Whitehall Mandarin Sir Tom, his own earnings-related, inflation-proofed, taxpayer-funded pension quite secure, has imposed his own arbitrary morality and retrospective terms on MPs' claims over the whole past 5 years. Why should MPs be surprised by all this? Ex-ministers have known for years that they're there to carry the can for dud official advice. Remember, yes, Minister and Sir Humphrey, backbenchers know the party leaders, all quietly comfortable in their own financial way, are vying with each other to show the voters how tough they can be. Gordon Brown offering too little too late in his usual catch-up fashion. What's more, MPs know their expenses have been too lavish for too long. So get over it, guys and girls. If you can't pay, I'm told there's a hardship fund being set up. Plenty of constituents have suffered that indignity. Fact is, this Parliament is a busted flush. It can only start to rebuild Westminster's reputation when we have a new one.
Polly, do you feel sorry for MPs?
I think I do. I think it's been an appalling mess, all of this. Gordon Brown has been about as inept as you can possibly be, and they are incandescent with fury. And the idea that it's reported that Gordon Brown didn't realise these letters were coming, or the row they were going to make, nonsense. We've all been talking about this for months, saying, when they get back in October, you just wait until these letters arrive. Legg is a man singularly ill-equipped to do this job. He's really clueless and not all that bright. And I don't think understood at all the political quagmire he was getting into here. It's quite random what he's picked out. I think to ask people to pay retrospectively for things that they were allowed to claim for at the time, you know, I think new rules desperately needed. This isn't going to happen again, because from now on there'll be total transparency, and then nobody in their right mind would, you know, buy themselves a packet of crisps on their expenses illegitimately after all of this. So this is about the past. It's not about the present or the future. And this has just made everything worse. And I'm afraid Gordon's hands are all over it. Utter ineptitude.
How did Legg come to this decision, do you think? How much do we know about him?
I think he's not all that sharp. I don't think he's all that astute. I don't think he understands a lot of what he's dealing with. You know, he's an old mandarin who has not actually been around a lot of the really tough decisions that have to be made, and I don't think he was the right person. Anyway, I think the idea that he could just set new rules, new rules are being set for the future. You can't set new rules for the past.
I think what we're seeing is how much civil servants are unaware of politics and how difficult politics is. And you often get that people who think politics is easy stray into the world and are eaten alive within minutes. To survive for a long time in politics, you need to know how the public will react to things, which is something the civil servants don't worry about. I agree with Polly, it is unfair on MPs. We should just hesitate for a moment, though, and remember that the fuss we're hearing about maladministration as soon as it affects MPs is much greater than the fuss we hear about maladministration that affects ordinary voters. Frequently, government makes stupid decisions. Frequently, government tries to make retrospective decisions. There's been a whole issue over tax credits of people suddenly finding they're asked to pay back money. Poor people with no cash getting hammered, but they get much more coverage when it's MPs. Nonetheless, of course, it's a disaster. Blame Gordon Brown, yes, but I want to blame Harriet Harman too. She should be the leader of the House of Commons.
Blame Gordon first.
We should blame Gordon Brown because he was the person who set this inquiry up, and when he set it up, he should have been aware of the consequences, the timing, the likely outcome.
But to be fair to him, I mean, obviously on timing, fine, but to be fair to him, he did say within the rules at the time.
Yes, and so he should have made sure that was what was happening. Of course, we would have then written stories saying, you know, how appalling the government's interfering in a free inquiry. I mean, one of those lessons that, yes, Prime Minister taught us is never set up an inquiry unless you know the outcome.
And Gordon always used to say that, didn't he?
He did.
It's funny that he's fallen foul of his own rule.
Yes,
there.
Well, sadly, he's not what he was. But Harriet Harman, who has too many jobs and is too busy doing too many things, has had a terrible year and got away with it largely. There's a Guardian story in the paper this week suggesting she should have known more about what was going on and indeed might have been warned. But right at the start of this year, she tried to pass a law exempting Parliament from freedom of information. Every step of the way, it's been behind the curve, not clear what to do. She should have known, she should have been thinking over the last few months, how do we handle the autumn? And almost what matters, I think, isn't just whether Legg says X and then more expenses say Y and then Kelly says, I don't know, another letter. It's the process, the timing. You wanted to get the message that this was a reform for the future, not dig up the past again.
She wasn't in a position to do that because Gordon had already set Legg in process and there was no way of interfering with Legg, and no doubt he would have said, look, they're trying to interfere with what I'm doing. I mean, the terms were not set right. They was done in a rush for a one-day headline for Gordon Brown. I don't think there's anything Harriet Harman could have prevent this car crash.
It was interesting because we were trying to think back whether it had been voted on and none of us could even remember it. It wasn't really even documented by any reporters, we're all ashamed to say.
I don't think it was voted on.
It wasn't. It was just decided by the government.
And the important thing is that the reason the MPs are so upset, most of them, is not that they'll have to pay back money, though some of them will, and maybe some of them have to pay back sizable sums of money they don't actually have, because if you have no outside income and your wife has no other income, to suddenly have to pay out, you know, raise the money, and you won't be able to borrow money, or not if you're a Labour MP anyway, you won't, on the basis of your future career, unlikely. What really upsets them, though, is the damage to their reputation, and when it comes to election day, every single opponent of a sitting MP, fairly or unfairly, will be pouring out leaflets saying your local MP claimed, you know, 50p for a packet of biscuits. Everything's going to be flammed up hugely.
That's
so it's their
anyway,
reputation
though,
that's so damaged. Yeah, well,
do you not think some of this paying back money might, I mean, Cameron did it very early, Hazel Blears did it very badly very early on, Cameron did it very smartly very early on, and if you get it right, sort of a bit of waving a cheque around can work as atonement, can't it?
Well, I don't think so, really, because it's a kind of admission of fault. I understand how Cameron and Osborne have got away with claiming £20,000 for their monster mortgages on houses that are much too big that they didn't need, and George Osborne flipped. It defies belief that these MPs, and part of the reason they're so furious, are being done for quite small sums of money for quite trivial things that they were allowed to claim, and yet, you know, these big fish have got off scot-free.
Because
very rich men.
The rules at the time said you could claim up to the maximum for the mortgage, so they couldn't go back and question that because it was in print. The rules were not clear in print on on incidental expenses.
And that's why we made them up.
It was intentionally vague. In fact, the Green Book didn't even really mention the so-called food allowance.
He should have taken it into account. He should have taken it into account that if he could see people claiming walloping great sums in order to play the property market, it was hardly fair to then come down very heavily on the bath plugs.
Well, I think there should never have been an investigation of the last 5 years of expenses. And why 5 years? We could have done two parliaments. We could have done 3 years. It's an arbitrary and unfortunate situation. I wonder whether Mike's right that in the end people will all just pay and give up. I think there's quite a mood of resentment. I think a lot of Labour MPs...
And these people on the way out anyway...
No, they're losing. I mean, the Wintertons, it's not just Labour people who are going to rebel. I think
Douglas Hogg?
Well, Hogg, yes, but that he can afford to pay and probably will. He's just going off and being miserable and sad that his career has ended as it has. The Wintertons, they've got a huge bill. Will
Hogg
they pay?
Hogg says he's going to sue.
Yeah. Will he be able to sue, though? It's a parliamentary process. I think it's quite tricky to sue that.
This is a Tory MP who's let it be known that he regards his dealings with the fees office as having the status of a legal contract. Yes. Which, so it's one of these...
He's
going to push
QC,
it all the way to court.
Hogg is an argumentative and excellent QC. Let me just make a small and very rare plea on his behalf. He was one of the lower claimers of all expenses in Parliament, well below half of the total that most people claimed. Yes, but he didn't claim very much overall. It's one of the sad and strange
cheap
situations.
Cheap moat cleaning on the cheap.
Well, no, it was not
defending
such a deep moat, maybe. We won't get away with defending Hogg, but one of the sad things is that MPs who claimed less in expenses are sometimes the ones who are now in trouble. The MPs who claimed the most money are often the ones who are not in trouble, and that includes Hogg, includes a lot of Labour MPs too. And it really does make them even more cross.
But if one of these guys pushed it all the way to, I don't know, whatever it would be, judicial review, and that was going on in February, March next year, is the public going to distinguish between this one maverick and the parties as a whole? Aren't they? Isn't this just
going
to...
No, the trouble is the public are going to be against anybody who raises their head, opposes anything. That's what's so unjust about this. They cannot defend themselves. Their position is indefensible. And frankly, in some ways, it is. Because when you hear that the first time ever that they barrack the Prime Minister in the Parliamentary Labour Party meeting this week, is it about war and death and terrible things that Labour's done? No, in the end, it's about their own expenses is what finally makes them rebel. And maybe it'll even bring Gordon Brown down. It is just possible that they are so angry that they will vote, it'll help undermine him if his ratings don't improve. And that's a bit disgusting.
It does one other thing, Polly. That may be true. It makes it very, very hard for Labour to get away with moving the message back onto the Tories. It was just beginning to happen. Questions about Tories' economic policy, about the impact of their immediate spending cuts. Labour had got that out of the conference season. That's all gone away this week. We're right back to decadent old politics, and the Tories can present themselves as the change. Now, of course, we know they're not fully the change. We know lots of Tory MPs have been mixed up in this too. But in the end, the public go, oh my goodness, we want a change of politics. And by doing that, it's bad news for Labour.
We're talking as if this week is the end of it, but it's not. He'll report in 3 weeks. When they have 3 weeks, they go back to him with their complaints.
We've got more
complaints.
Expenses. We've got another year's worth.
Then after 2 weeks, it'll go on forever.
And then we've got
Kelly. Yeah, and then Kelly. And that is the government's culpability, because they could have synchronised them a little bit better. But however worried MPs are about their own jobs, they do well to give some serious thought to what's happening with everyone else's. This week's unemployment figures did, however, contain a faint glimmer of light.
There were some slightly more encouraging figures on the labour market yesterday. We've all been expecting unemployment to keep rising inexorably to 3 million and over, and they seem to suggest that maybe, just maybe, the labour market might be getting past the worst, because we'd all been expecting unemployment to jump through the 2.5 million level. Actually, it stabilised at just under that level. Employment, similarly, didn't really fall any further, nor did vacancies. So just signs that things may be getting better. On the downside, of course, we had the lowest figure on record for growth in average earnings. You've heard of all these pay freezes that are going. Well, average earnings only rose by 1.6% in the latest 3 months compared to a year earlier. That's a very weak figure if you're hoping that consumer spending will take over and drive the economy forward.
That was our economics expert, Ashley Seeger. Polly, what's going on? These figures should be going up, not down.
I think it is very interesting. I think that a lot of deals were made. I mean, a third of people in the private sector took freezes, and mostly they took freezes as a quid pro quo for holding on to jobs or going part-time. And I think there's been a terrific pulling together in the private sector on this. It makes sense that jobs have been saved. Also, this government has put in a lot of money, particularly towards the young, to keep people in education, to get people into programs to stop people being unemployed, to get employers to take people on, and it's working. And you know, will Labour get credit for this? Well, probably not, because people will just say, "Oh, it wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be." They won't actually say, "Look, Labour has done a huge amount to prevent the very worst, and maybe it actually has done has succeeded."
Julian, do you agree with that?
Well, clearly the private sector has taken a lot of the pain by employees trying not to lose their jobs but work differently. That's clearly a better thing. It's maybe some of the benefits of a slightly more flexible labour market and one where contracts can be changed. It may also lead to a lot of private sector employees to look at the public sector and say, "Well, we've done it, you do it too. Pay freeze all round, please."
But don't you think, I mean, if you just take a step back, interest rate cuts, printing money, fiscal injections, all the rest of it, which Gordon Brown's script is very much you were against these things, or you're against some of them on the Conservative side. Doesn't the sort of Cameron's big state is at the root of all the problems look a bit frazzled if what Gordon's done has had some impact on jobs?
Clearly government spending must have had some impact on the economy, cutting VAT by £12.5 billion. If it didn't go to consumers, it certainly went to retail businesses who employ a lot of people in Britain.
Went somewhere.
So it certainly went somewhere. So that's £12.5 billion more in the economy sloshing around than would have been, although the government will have had to borrow that money instead and will have to pay it back at some point. It does in some ways challenge the Conservative Party. They, on the other hand, can say they're not talking about the past now, they're talking about the future, they're talking about what to do after the election, and that's what they're keeping the message on. They're trying not to rake over where they were a year ago, where they are this year. They also have unsuccessfully, I think, tried to correct Gordon Brown. He constantly says they opposed everything, that they would have done nothing, and that's simply not the case, and it isn't the case of what they were saying at the time. It seems to be the accepted media line.
But I mean, on the VAT,
of course, the Liberal Democrats opposed it too. So St. Vince Cable, was he right or wrong? We don't know. There's other ways of spending that money. He said spend the £12.5 billion on other things.
Yeah.
I think in the end, it isn't government employment that's keeping those totals down.
So you don't think that if it had been a Tory government, you'd think that unemployment would not have risen as much?
Well, I don't know what would have happened, but I do think that the impression people have of what a Tory government would have done is false. I think the Conservative government would have done more things. I think it started with the bailout at the time, a year ago.
But it wouldn't have borrowed, would it? It wouldn't have put this extra money into the economy, which, as you say, will have to be repaid, but probably means unemployment's lower now than it would otherwise have been, right?
It might do.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to see. I mean, the Conservative Party's argument is not at the election is not going to be about what happened in the last year. Labour Party's argument, if it is what happened in the last year, it's very difficult to win people over. We got it right in the past. Voters tend to think about the future. They tend to think about future worries. They're not very grateful for what was done in the past. It may be the Conservative Party is very lucky. They will inherit a country that's suddenly going into economic growth. Not very strong growth, but not out of control. Unemployment that's not as high as people thought it was going to be. A currency that's got weaker. The Conservative Party complained about that. That may have strengthened the economy too. Low long-term, low interest rates. People quite like that. Beginning to rise property prices. The Tory Party could really inherit a situation that's not as bad as everybody thinks now and get all the credit for it poor old Gordon Brown isn't going to get.
And you have to remember too that unemployment not going up as much as predicted means a huge amount of money not being added to the national debt, because all the predictions about what the debt would be are predicated on 3 million and above unemployed, which is phenomenally expensive. And the automatic stabilisers, it's not only the lack of receipts into the Treasury that was feared, but also the huge paying out of benefits. Now, if neither of those things happen, if more people are in work, they're paying taxes, receipts to the Treasury are better, as well as the outflow.
We should remember that in past recessions, unemployment keeps going up. After the recession begins to look like it's over. So we shouldn't think this is fine now, this is the worst it's going to be. It will get worse still.
We'll have to wait and see. I mean, this week's figures were pretty encouraging. But on the other side, the point you both made is that hours were down, pay was down. Most people, however bad unemployment is, haven't lost their job. Polly, when it comes to brute politics rather than economics, surely the feel-good factor is about what most people are earning, not how many people have lost their jobs.
Yeah, next year, all the predictions are that pay is going to be rising in the private sector. Inflation expected to be running at 2.5-3%, and actually private sector pay, according to Income Data Services, is expected to be around there too. The public sector, whoever wins, is going to be held down. If it's the Tories, it's a total freeze, and if it's Labour, it's 0-1%. The public sector is going to fall even further behind. There is this great myth out there, the public sector is feather-bedded and paid more. It's paid less. It always is. It always has been. Sometimes it lags further behind. Sometimes it catches up a bit. It's suffered quite hard cutbacks in the last few years, since 2005, it has been paid less than inflation and less than the private sector.
It's paid less with great variation between different kinds of public sector jobs. I mean, the Labour Party too supports a pay freeze on the top end. There have been people in the public sector who've done extremely well over the last decade.
Nevertheless, I think that's true. And I think if you work for the public sector, you don't expect to get private sector rates. But nevertheless, even looking at those, you know, I think too high, paid above the Prime Minister rates, if you look at the jobs they're doing and you compare that with equivalents in the private sector, they're still paid far less than they would get for running companies, which are rather easier to run than running, you know, a hospital, a big school, some of the really complicated things you have to run in the public sector. So although it looks gross, it's still less than private equivalents.
On a note of disagreement, we have to leave that there. But if you want more business or political analysis on unemployment, go to guardian.co.uk.
Well, finally, at the start of this new term, as we count down to that election, I'd like to ask each of you for just one nugget of advice for each of Gordon Brown and David Cameron. Practical things that you think they could do to boost their chances this side of Christmas, and no expenses, please. So first of all, Julian, what should each of them do?
David Cameron just needs to make sure he knows who his new parliamentary party is going to be. I would put a lot of work into that right now. I think he's prepared to lose all but two of the current sitting Tory MPs if he has to, as be him and George Osborne. He doesn't expect that to happen, but if it needs to happen, it will. So he better work out who's getting what seat and where, and I put a lot of time into that, and I wouldn't let the press find out. Gordon Brown, I'd just try and go on about the Tories and spending and cuts and risk the dangers of it. Tricky for him, though. Very hard to get that across.
Polly?
I think the economy is the best one for Gordon Brown. You know, he may well have saved us. At least there's a pretty good case that he has made a huge difference to how much suffering there has been in what could have been the worst recession since the 1930s. But it's difficult to get praise retrospectively. As for Cameron, I would do anything I could to get it off the economy and to get it off his own plans for cutting everything to shreds and to talk about positive things. I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful if Cameron himself went for proportional representation, leapfrogged over Labour's pathetic conservatism.
Just a complete game changer.
Game changer. It would not
be great for us as well.
It's a terrible thing.
I'm sure he's tuning in at this moment and refining his policy.
Can I have one, Tom?
Yeah, you go.
I think Brown needs to do something eye-catching, but also sensible, like possibly remutualisation of Northern Rock, which we were talking about before the programme, or possibly something like living wage. And then Cameron should probably ditch his European friends.
That wouldn't be bad, would it?
And needs to do a lot of work on his small government thing, which I think has been really not gone down well with lefties, not meant to go down well with lefties, I understand that, but he's been so intent on getting the commentariat on side, he needs to do a lot of work on sort of explaining how I think lefties could probably like it in some form.
6 million public workers, they're not
going to like it. No. I understand the politics of it, but I'm surprised that so early he's been happy to sort of jettison his progressive mates.
I mean, I kind of think the same thing. On David Cameron, I'd say more or less keep on tracking. I think Julian's advice is good, but just a bit of caution on the state. He doesn't need to kind of sound quite as severe as he's taken to sounding. But on Gordon Brown, I think I'd say try and learn to say sorry. You know, try
can't
and.
Do it.
I know you can't. I know, but I've got to sort of.
It can't. We can't have.
He can't say sorry. It's all my fault.
I can imagine his parents all those years ago at home saying, when he was about 7 year old, saying, "Gordon, you've got to say sorry."
Like you mean it.
I think it's very difficult for any politicians to say sorry, particularly about enormous things. I mean, can you imagine how Tony Blair, who was the most adept at saying almost anything, he couldn't say sorry for the war. Never. He never can, because it's blood on his hands straight away.
But the twist here, I think, and the specific thing I think Gordon Brown should be saying sorry for is, I'm sorry that we got some things wrong on the economy, on letting the capitalists get away with it all.
I don't think people
I think the
hear
Conservatives
that.
Got it more wrong. I mean, I think that's a more credible position than where he is at the moment.
But I think that's very process, and I don't know that necessarily people will pick up on a sorry or not.
It goes together with a forward promise to be much tougher on bonuses, for instance. You say we got that wrong, but that's where I agree with you,
that I think it has to be, there has to be some kind of offer, some kind of we would do this with Britain. And I don't think that that is something that the government, I think the government's got a huge offer. It's just that they're not getting terrible phrase cut through.
But the single problem he's got at the moment, Allegra, isn't it, is that whenever he says, oh, isn't it bad that there's these banks and these Tories and all these evil, wicked people trying to do things, people can say, who's been in charge for the last 12 years? That's why I reluctantly
it's
come
a fair
to this
cop
apology.
Gov. Okay. That is all for this week. Thank you to Julian Glover and Polly Toynbee for coming in, and to Francesca Panetta for producing us.
And we'll be back next week. Until
then, goodbye.